Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, we're going to talk about something that maybe not doesn't sound too exciting. That's tower lighting. But there's some actually new things in tower lighting that are pretty exciting. Fewer regulations, easier technology, and a whole new way to pay for it that really frees up engineers. I'm talking about what LumenServe offers, and our guest is Bear Poth. That's coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at Nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. And today, it's especially the light bulb at the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack. I'm here in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. If I move my head, you can see their advertising message right there. That's the company I work for full time. I appreciate them buttering my bread, so to speak, and giving me an hour and a half or so on Thursdays to do this show and talk to you and fellow engineers in the broadcasting community. We got a cool show for you today. Our guest for today, I met him a couple of months ago and maybe 3 months ago now, and had a good presentation. I thought, this needs to be on the TWRT show. This really needs to be here. But before we introduce our guest, let's head up to Mukwonago, Wisconsin. Always fun to say that. And hear from Chris Tarr. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks. Happy to be here. A little overcast today here in Wisconsin, but still warm. It's like 80 degrees. I just put out my new weather station. I'll have to give you a link later on to put on the show notes so people can see what the, you know, we always talk about the weather here. You know, I'll give you a link to the weather station to actually see what it's doing. But I'm up in my living room again today. So hopefully, you know, my coworker down here, Louis, won't be making too much of a noise. And I'm looking forward to today's show. It's good to, I actually have a day where I'm not running around. So I'm actually very glad that I can be here today.
Chris, it was you who years ago, you kind of made me jealous on your weather station. Years ago, I had installed the weather station, and it was kind of clunky, cranky. It wasn't very good, but it had some kind of web presence and some software that spoke serial to the web and some nonsense. And you put in a weather station, and it was so cool. It had dials and graphs, and it just looked amazing. I thought, oh yeah, Chris has got a really cool weather station. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. The late Barry Thomas and I—that was something we shared a lot of. Was we were both weather geeks, and he and I would add and change things on weather stations and compare the results. And so, it's been a hobby of mine for years and years and years. So, I just got some new hardware today, and in fact, just got it turned on right before I jumped on the web here. So, I'm anxious to play with that later on today.
Hey, if you like it, why don't you share the model, and we'll put it in the show notes, because I am getting ready to actually sell the house that I'm living in now. And my realtor thinks that maybe I should offer to leave the weather station because there's a local panel for it, but it's also on the interwebs on Weather Underground. And it's got a nice graph there. You can look at daily graphs, weekly, monthly, and all that. It's kind of cool. So I may be in the market for a new weather station whenever I move to a different house. Yeah. So
yeah,
I want to find out what you thought. Good deal. Good deal. Hey, let's not put him off any farther. Our guest here is Bear. Bear, say your last name for me so I can get it right.
It is said Poth, P-O-T-H. If you'd have pronounced it correctly, I would have been worried about you. Most people pronounce it Poth. It is Poth. And there's actually a little small town in Texas called Poth, Texas, which is named after our family.
Really? How about that? Bear Poth. All right. Yeah. Bear, you and I met about 3 months ago here in Nashville. Why were you here?
I am the CEO of a company called LumenServe, and we do nothing but tower lighting, specifically a service that's unique called Tower Lighting as a Service. And we're also members of SBE, and we have spoken with probably 40 plus SBEs across the country. Everything from the wood panel halls up in Boston to a catfish parlor down in Beaumont, Texas, which was really good food, by the way. And we were in Nashville doing a presentation on tower lighting to your Nashville SBE. And it was held at a Chuy's Tex-Mex, which, by the way, was founded where I live. I live in Austin, Texas, and Chuy's founders. I've been going to Chuy's for 20 years or 30 years, probably, whenever they founded it.
So you knew exactly which margarita to order.
Exactly. They ran out of tequila after you'd ordered your three martinis.
Yeah, for the SBE margaritas. Was there. We ran.
Oh, gosh. That is a common theme throughout Kirk's life. Everywhere he goes, they run out of booze.
Well, Bear, and you know, I feel odd calling you Bear, but that's your name and that's what you go by. It's okay to call you Bear, right?
Absolutely. And it came because I
love it.
My legal name is Terrell. It came because I was a fat kid with a teddy bear. And for some okay. reason, since I was 9 months old, my family has called me Bear and friends, and it just became my name. And so people tend to remember it.
We'll get into the show here in just a minute. I got to say that, you know, a lot of engineers like myself started in the business, and tower lighting was kind of a boring thing. I mean, there were red incandescent lights on the tower, some different arrangement of them depending on the tower height. And sometimes there was a mechanical seesaw flasher, you know, at the base of the tower, or maybe we got really fancy and there was a solid state flasher at the base of the tower that every time a thunderstorm would come by, it'd blow up the solid state flasher. Well, tower lighting has gotten a lot more interesting over the last 30 or 40 years. We've gone through the whole strobe lighting thing, and now we're into an LED technology. And I think early LED technology had some stumbling blocks. Seemed to me it did. But now things are getting pretty right as rain. And Bear is going to be here to tell us about that, and also to tell us not only about the some of the technical improvements and some of the new FAA requirements that you will want to know, but also about some of the new a new financial model in how tower lighting can be done, making it more worry-free. One less thing to worry about for busy engineers who take care of a lot of towers. Guys like, you know, Chris Tarr, who takes care of a lot of towers. That's coming up. Our show This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by Nautel. You know these folks at Nautel. They make transmitters, AM and FM transmitters, HD and DAB radio systems. But they also work really hard to help educate us engineers. They do a great job. And coming up, we have another Transmission Talk Tuesday. We're doing this show live on Thursday, July 13th. They've got another Transmission Talk Tuesday coming up on July 18th. That's a Tuesday. And the topic is going to be combiners and filters. And that is a topic that I have got to see this show because, you know, I see combiners, I see filters, I've ordered them, I've hooked them up. I've never had to really tweak one very much, never had problems with one, but I'd like to know more about how they work and kind of what magic that they do. Chris Tarr, do you have some combiners in your cadre of tower sites?
As a matter of fact, I do. I have one and I'm about ready to order another.
Mm-hmm. Got any filters at tower sites?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, wherever you see a site with combined FMs, generally you'll see, you know, some sort of combiner or filter or something along those lines. So, you know, fortunately, they're very reliable passive devices. So set them and forget them. But yeah, you know, you'll find them in more places than you think.
Cool. All right. Well, if you have any questions about them, you want to know more about how they work. And, you know, for me, they've just been black boxes that I've ordered, you know, put in the line and they seem to do their job, but it's not always that easy. And if you want to know how they work, well, Nautel will have that on Transmission Talk Tuesday. You can sign up at the Nautel website, go to nautel.com/webinars and then click on Transmission Talk Tuesday. And you'll see the link to sign up for the July 18th. Edition of Transmission Talk Tuesday. Thanks a lot, Nautel, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, we have got a real put-together show for you here. Bear has taken the most important graphical images and slides from his presentation that he's been showing to some SBE meetings and put them together for us. So, Chris, you and I get a chance to inquire and talk about these slides as they come up, ask questions in our format here. So, Bear, tell us a little bit about what we're going to be seeing in the next few minutes.
So our business is completely in and around tower lighting. And the way we were founded is we actually had a number of different companies in the telecom space, and we had a group that owned about 20 towers come to us back in 2014, and they wanted to upgrade from the old incandescent technology to the new LED technology. So we gave them a proposal, and they came back to us, and they said, you know, we can do two or three of these a year with our capital budget. And that was kind of strange because it was a telephone company, and, you know, they generally have good financial wherewithal. And so I was taking a shower where a lot of good ideas hopefully come from. And I came out of the shower and I called my business partner and I said, hey, let's tell them that we will buy them a new lighting system for their tower, and that we will take care of it if anything goes wrong with it. And we'll do the required FAA monitoring compliance associated with it. And so we offered that up to the customer, and they said, we love the idea. And we ended up signing a contract, and we put it into a separate company, and we've been sort of going and blowing ever since. About a third of our market that we work with is in the media space, both television and radio. And one of the things we do is go out and meet with different SBE groups. We're members of SBE, and we've done a national webinar associated with the SBE learning. And you guys are just really, I'll say, fantastic engineers on the media side, because you have to deal not only with you know, physical things like sound and walls and facilities and power, but also the internet protocol items, all your IT stuff, and then the RF piece of it, which is a real important but tricky piece of it. One of the things you also have to deal with is tower lighting. And for broadcasters, tower lighting, you know, is a requirement. It doesn't make you any money, and it's an area that, where there's an opportunity to leverage off of folks. And so what we do is we go out and talk to these SBE groups, and we talk about three primary topics. The first one is sort of just some things on the regulatory side to be aware of, and some of the evolution of the rules. Secondly is the technology itself. And thirdly is this different model. So I kind of stripped away a set of slides there. You know, if you want to show any of those, that I can begin that to talk through that from a education standpoint.
Yeah, from our time constraints, why don't we jump right in, Suncast? If you can go ahead and begin with the first slide in the series, we'll take a look here.
So that beacon right there, we actually own and operate that beacon. That's on a tower looking out towards Canada and North Dakota, and it's probably 300 some odd feet high, I would guess. And that's a medium intensity beacon. And if you go to the next slide, Suncast, one of the key things that's happened is, you know, the way tower lighting is regulated is originally it's all under the FCC, and up through 1972, the FCC had a set of regulations associated with it. And in 1972, the FAA began to publish those in a circular, what we call a 7460 circular. And that was originally in revision A, and it's all the way up to revision M as in Mary now. And so when I talk about what's happened from a regulatory perspective, we always kind of look at the last couple of iterations of that, which is revision L and revision M. And I've just chosen a few slides here to highlight some of the things that people need to be aware of. So what happened in revision L was a couple of key changes. One is, if you look at a typical medium intensity tower, the height on that formerly was 500 feet, and that got moved up to 700 feet. So, you know, prior to revision L, towers that were greater than 500 feet required the high intensity, which is a much higher capital requirement. And the other big change that occurred is there was a study that had been actually conducted back in 2012, and revision L came out in 2016. But the results of it is what's called this Avian standard, if you will. And what they discovered is that these solid-burning L810 side lights, which you see out there in, on many towers to this day, attracted migratory waterfowl and other birds. And that they made some changes on the subsequent circulars in order to eliminate those. And you have the opportunity to move away from having those side lights on certain types of tower types. So the slide that you're seeing there is an E-style tower. That's a dual mode tower. The E1 on the left is less than 350 feet. The one on the right is less than 700 feet. And you can see the green dotted lines are places where there historically were L810 side lights, and those were removed starting in revision L. We did not remove those on the E1 tower, which is less than 350 feet. Those are still there, but under the revision L and beyond, and towards including revision M, those are now flashing in synchronicity with the top beacon. So if you've got a tower out there today that still has these solid burning side lights, there's an opportunity to move away from those. And there's still some folks that are between 500 and 700 feet that may still have high intensity lights. And of course you can move to medium intensity. And we work with the customer to do all the appropriate filings and whatnot to make that happen. So those are two important things that came out of the circular L revision that folks need to be aware of. If you go to the next slide, prior to the revision L, the language in the circular talked about not having any obstructions for your lights. And it wasn't specific with what an obstruction is. In revision L, which came out in 2016, they became more specific with the requirements there, and that is that if it's anything greater than 7/8 of an inch. So you can see a couple of examples there. If you take the picture at the top, that's an example of what looks to be a cellular type tower where you've got some cellular arrays with a light beacon that has been nested in the middle of that, which would be difficult for a pilot to see or any kind of aircraft to see. If you look at the bottom left, you would potentially have an antenna that looks to be larger than 7/8 inch diameter that's blocking that top beacon. So those are both issues. And you can really solve this two ways. One way, like on the top picture there, is you could look at a beacon extension, which would basically just raise the beacon up to resolve the issue. The other way you can do it, if you look at the one on the bottom left, where you've got an antenna that's greater than 7/8 of an inch, and you've got an obstruction, you can solve that by doing what's called a plus one beacon. Well, that's the addition of another beacon at the top such that you can get 360 degree view around that. So the 7/8 inch rule is one. We do a lot of work for police departments and public safety. And it's pretty often you'll see an antenna up there, you know, that's greater than 7/8 inch where you may have to look at a plus one beacon. So we keep that in mind in order to meet the requirements. The specificity of 7/8 being the maximum obstruction. For your side lights, the L810s, you cannot have any obstruction in front of those. So those side lights on the side, you can't have any. But for the beacon, it's a 7/8 inch rule. If you go to the next slide, another thing that came out in revision L was a requirement. You can see the language there for a biannual lens inspection. And the specific language says, due to the effects of harsh environments, light fixture lenses should be visually inspected every 24 months or when the light fixture fails for UV damage, cracks, crazing, dirt buildup, et cetera, to ensure the certified light output is not deteriorated. And some of the things that we see, if you look at some of these pictures here, the bottom right-hand corner is a classic example. That's one that I actually went out and saw. It was a beacon that had been damaged. It was still flashing. It was flashing about once every 36 seconds or something. Clearly, that's one of the purposes of that is you just have a damaged lens. The bottom left photograph is an example of a little L810 side light that's clearly been knocked off its pedestal. If you look at the top right, that's an example of something called crazing. You probably have seen that, Kurt and Chris, in automobile headlights and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
Where you have some of the gaseous that comes off of the plastics and whatnot, and it ends up coating the inside of it. It can create some issues there. The biggest issue that you run into here, that we run into with our extensive tower lightings that we own across the country, is bird poop. And, if a bird finds a spot and it really wants to, cover the light, it'll do that. And you have to resolve that, by either cleaning or replacing that beacon and putting some bird spikes, to keep that from happening. So that's another example of on the regulatory side of something that people may not be aware of. And that's called a biennial, which is every 2 years lens inspection. We typically do that with a drone where we're able to do it, the drone. And we'll go up and we've got a military qualified drone pilot, and we'll go and we'll do a full 360 degree of it. We'll put it all in catalog and put it into the logbook of that customer to make sure that we've documented that biannual lens inspection that's required. If you go to the next slide, go ahead.
That kind of inspection, is that whether you've got incandescent lights, strobe lights, or LEDs? It applies to all those?
Right. It applies to any type of lighting that you have out there. And, you know, we see a variety of different situations. Now, the other thing that happened with the most recent revision, which is revision M, as in Mary, is a requirement that all new LED systems that are installed have infrared capability or IR capability. What you see is a lot of public safety, perhaps border patrol, police, and they're using night vision goggles. And the two photographs that you see there, the one on the left is an example of what you would see without night vision goggles, and the one on the right is with night vision goggles. And when you have night vision goggles on, you can see the heat signature of these incandescent bulbs out there. And so all likelihood, the photograph on the right is lights out there that are incandescent or perhaps strobe or whatever that are putting off a fair amount of heat. Well, the advantage of an LED is that it doesn't put out a lot of heat because it doesn't consume a lot of power. And mm-hmm. the disadvantage is that they're hard to see with night vision goggles. So what the FAA mm-hmm. required, starting with the specifications, is that you include an IR wavelength that's output by your light. And we started installing those actually about a year and a half before they were required because they were available. But what they do is you know, you continue to put out the same light that you do today. So, you know, your white light during the day doesn't change. Your red light at night doesn't change. But you also put out an infrared wavelength that's visible. So even though you're not putting out the heat signature that gives you the infrared, you are putting out the actual infrared lambda or wavelength such that these night vision goggles can see it. Now, there's a couple of things about that. It's required for any new LED system that you install. But it's also some language in there that talks specifically that if you've got an existing LED system that's not with infrared and you replace, say, the middle beacon with an infrared beacon, you need to replace the beacons above it as well, because you wouldn't want to have a false sense of security that there's nothing above that infrared beacon if you had a set of night vision goggles on. It makes a lot of common sense. And that's an example of something that they were very clear applies to anybody that's got an LED system that, you know, that's not infrared today, and they replace one of the middle beacons with an infrared capable LED system. Well, you'd want to make the ones above it such that they're equally visible. So that's an interesting thing. But anyway, the infrared piece is out there, and all the new systems that we install, of course, are infrared capable.
Mayor, I want to ask you a couple more technical questions about the infrared stuff in just a minute. We're going to take our first a commercial break here, but I'm going to be curious to know something about how the infrared emitter is put in there, if it's part of the rest of the LEDs or if it's a separate device, and how it gets monitored. So I'm curious about that. Maybe you are too. Chris Tarr, maybe you'll come back with a question or two. You're watching This Week in Radio Tech. Bear Poth, he's the CEO, president of LumenServe. They do tower lighting, and that's all they do. So they're really good experts at this topic, keeping up with some recent changes from the FAA and what's required is actually generally less required, but there's a little bit more in some areas. So he's updating us on that. And we're going to hear from Broadcast Bionics, our great sponsor, Broadcast Bionics. We'll be right back right after this.
Welcome to the Bionic Studio. The Bionic Studio brings all audience interaction to the fingertips of a production team in radio, TV, and podcast. Our workflow-led system is working 24/7 around the world for small broadcasters and national and international networks. Our telephony module, Bionic Talk Show, allows cost-effective centralization, remote operation, scalability, and resilience across an entire network of stations, but at the same time is used in single-studio self-op environments. Social media curation and activity is now considered a broadcast critical part of programming. Bionic Social means the studio isn't overwhelmed with a wall of interaction from an ever-growing number of social platforms. We combine SMS, MMS, and email together with a speech-to-text service for listeners using smart speakers. We enable studio teams to curate, filter, and display all platforms in one place, and post text, images, and video content to multiple platforms in one operation. Effortless collection of video content with Bionic Director has helped position some of the world's most successful stations as leaders in viral content, generating appointments to listen and free marketing via retweets and shares. Bionic Contest enables end-to-end tracking of on-air competitions, live reads, and prizes. These could be on-air contests, automated SMS entry, or online. Anywhere, and Skype TX for Radio brings high-quality audio and video contribution into the studio with ease. No need for dedicated PCs to run different applications. Everything is controlled within the Bionic Studio UI. And incoming connections are visible to users, along with all other platforms. Our codec integration enables connection, algorithm configuration, and directory to a wide range of IP and ISDN codecs. The Bionic Studio, a unique suite of products designed to enable your talent to work smarter.
Some amazing stuff from the Bionic Studio from Broadcast Bionics. And you know, we got to meet or talk again to Dan McQuillan last week about Virtual Rack and how they're virtualizing more and more broadcast infrastructure. Pretty cool stuff from Broadcast Bionics. Thanks so much for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. And you, engineers and other people in radio, program directors and so forth, all these things offered by Broadcast Bionics are of great interest and very useful to us making better content. All right, This Week in Radio Tech, it's our 652nd show. We've got Bear Poth with us, President CEO of LumenServe. Chris Tarr is along with us. Chris, I'm scratching my head wondering about this infrared, because, you know, those of us on the ground or even in the air without infrared goggles, we can't see this, and yet it's required. And so I have questions. Maybe you have questions too. How does this work? Is this an extra emitter that's added to the lighting assembly?
It's done two ways. Initially, Kirk, there was an emitter that was put on. If you take a look at the beacon, if you will, there's an emitter that was put on the very top of it that became part of the red lamp circuit. And then all the ability to, you know, monitor it and everything was included in that circuit and that system on that nighttime mode. What has evolved since then in many of the designs is the little LEDs that sit on the flat panel that shine the light up, that hit the curved mirrors that beam the light out towards the pilot. Mm-hmm. One of the benefits of this technology is intellectual property regarding light pollution minimization. And the way that's mm-hmm. done is to take it and point the light out. So if I took one of these beacons and I set it on a bar stool, something that you would understand, right? A bar stool. And you turn off the lights, you would see basically a red line almost around the room, you know, a few inches wide because it's emitting the light straight out. And so it gives you, you know, the ability to really reduce that. So what they are doing with some of the new designs is actually putting the IR capability into the LED chip itself. So you'd have a white LED, you'd have a red LED, and you'd have an infrared one as part of that certified system there. And the way it's monitored is it's monitored as part of the system, as part of that red circuit. So there's a certain load associated with that. You can monitor a system predominantly two ways. One is with an automated system. The other one is visually. So on the automated system, we use the system to be able to make sure that the red circuit is working. If you were to monitor a system visually, it becomes a bit of a challenge with the IR piece because you can't see IR. And it's not clear to me. I haven't seen any language on the right way to do that. I was just in a meeting a few hours ago where one of the guy was using his infrared detection capability from his phone, and he had indicated that he was able to, you know, detect the infrared on his tower. That can become an issue on a tall tower. The other thing, we had a customer when this first came out that came in and said, we want to test it. And they actually put, this is in Oklahoma, they put someone with night vision goggles, and they happened to be in, I think they were in the public safety area, and they went and looked at all the towers with night vision goggles and said, yeah, we can see the infrared on it. That's another way to do it. So we monitor it with our monitoring system. And we've got a monitoring system that's been designed to monitor not only new systems that we install, but it really any kind of system. A lot of our customers will come to us and they'll say, hey, I've got 20 towers. I need three. You need to help me with three of them right now, but I want you to monitor the other 17 of them. So we've built a monitoring capability that lets us monitor any type of lighting system that's out there, as well as the new systems that we install. And it uses both SNMP capabilities as well as simple dry contacts. And we use that to do the monitoring of the full lighting system, including the infrared.
Now, you mentioned SNMP, and so you're talking Chris Tarr's language. But I was going in a different direction. See, I was thinking maybe there were some pets that could see infrared, and you could train, you know, a pet to tell you whether the lights were working or not. My mind's going. And I found cats and dogs, not so much. But I'll tell you what animals can see infrared. Mosquitoes. So you can have like a band of trained mosquitoes. Vampire bats. bed bugs, that's good to know, and some snake and beetle species. Also, goldfish and salmon can detect infrared.
You know, Kirk, I would just kind of go with the infrared detection stuff. I mean, yeah. If you want to train these mosquitoes and things to do that, I don't know that I would go that route. I would just use SNMP and be done with it. But hey, you know, I don't judge. If you want to have Kirk's mosquitoes, check your tower lights for you. All right.
Well, also on the list is apparently bullfrogs. You imagine you hold the bullfrog up. Ribbit. Okay, good. Infrared's working. All right. Enough silliness. Okay. I'm always trying to find the angle. You know, they're always trying to find the angle. All right. Bear is, for those of us in the audience who aren't silly like me, I'm sorry. And Chris, I'm sorry. Did you have any questions at this point for Bear?
No, I'm just following along. You know, all that stuff, you know, I seem to remember it. I don't know where. I've seen his presentation before, so I'm kind of familiar with what he's talking about.
Don't go to sleep on me, Chris, okay, since you've seen this presentation.
let's continue where we left off. Suncast, hit it, and Bear, take it away.
Okay. We have, if you go look at Rev M of the FAA circular right now on tower lighting, I think it's a 106-page federal document, and that could make your eyes a little bit of droopy sometimes. So what we wanted to do is kind of pull the highlights out of it, and this is a poster that we've created, and it's available to anybody on this call. Just email us at info@lumenserve.com, which is the same website that has the portal with all the information on it. But the way this thing is set up is you have your painted towers, which are the ones on the left, which is really your legacy system, which are painted aviation orange and white for day marking and with red beacons and or side lights for night marking. And those go from, you know, 100 feet to 2,200 feet. And on the top row, we have the all white day and all white night. So day white, night white. And on the bottom row, we have the dual mode, which is white day, red night. And then the green column is the medium intensity lights, which are less than 700 feet. And then the sort of aqua colored columns, the two on the right, are the high intensity, which is greater than 700 feet. So if you were ever, you know, in a meeting as an engineer and you wanted to talk about tower lighting with a, you know, a finance person or general manager, say, hey, we're thinking about doing this or this kind of tower, this is a really good tool to do that. Also, in the top left-hand corner, we put a simple checklist of compliance things just to make sure you're focused on those in order to, you know, ensure you're in full compliance with your tower and whatnot. So we find this to be a really nice item for people that like towers, and we love them. And they're available in 11x17 and also 24x36. So I've actually got one. If you see behind me, the poster behind me is the 24x36, and that's available for anybody. So if you go to the next slide, go ahead. Or if you got any questions,
I'll put a link in the show notes where people can sign up or request one of those posters.
Okay. One of the other programs that we talk about, absolutely, is the Never Paint Your Tower Again program. And what that is taking a lighting system from a style A tower to a style E tower. So the language that's required, and it's shown in that slide there, is that you do an inspection of your tower for paint. You have to use a current paint card that's up to date, and it asks that you inspect it at the midpoint or higher of the tower. And if it passes, great. If it fails, that can be really expensive. We used to look at Guy Tower rates at $20 a linear foot to paint, and that's long since gone with inflation and the increased cost for tower labor as well as the paint. And it's not unusual for us to see you know, more than $30 a foot and sometimes greater than $50 a linear foot to go paint a tower. And our experience has shown that typically every 7 years, that's a very average and generalized number. And it can vary greatly if you're in a place that gets a lot of sandstorms or a place that's got a lot of saline, it can change that. But the Never Paint Your Tower Again program gives you the opportunity to move your tower from an A-style tower to a dual mode tower. And we've done that for a bunch of towers across the country. And our company actually is part of our service that we offer would do help you with the paperwork and do the heavy lifting to make sure that happens. The only thing that you need to be cognizant of is paint serves two purposes for towers. It serves the purpose of obstruction marking, aviation orange and white so the planes can see it, but also for corrosion prevention. Most towers, by and large, are galvanized. And so you'll see a tower that's galvanized, that's dual mode and not painted, right next to the same tower that's style A and is painted. And the painting is done in that instance really more for the obstruction prevention. So that's something you have to keep on top of and think about a little bit. But we've had a lot of customers that have moved over there, and they eliminate that every 7 year on average cost to paint, which continues to go up. So that's a Never Paint Your Tower Again program. And if you have kind of a really good sweet spot tower, is a tower that's say less than 700 feet and it's still under the old circular, so it's still got the solid burning side lights at the 1/4 and 3/4 like we talked about earlier, and it's painted, you have the opportunity to move that over to a dual mode tower. There you don't have to paint it every 7 years, and you've removed the need for lights at the 1/4 and the 3/4 because you've rolled it up to the next circular and to meet the Avian standard. And by doing that, you really have eliminated the need to paint it. You've eliminated lighting on your system. You've upgraded to an LED. And that's a program that, that we do quite a bit with folks to get a lot of advantages from a cost perspective. Next slide. So the compliance checklist, which is in the top left-hand corner there, just a reminder, everybody, is the first is, monitor your lighting system and upon a qualifying outage, ensure that you follow what's now called the Notice to Air Missions. It was Notice to Airmen. It changed in 2021. And the requirements to do that in less than 30 minutes. So we have active monitoring on all of our lighting systems. We do 5-minute polling, active polling. So our average time to know there's an outage is about 3 minutes. And we have none of them that we let go past 30 minutes, but our average time to follow NOTAM is, maybe 18 minutes or so, because sometimes it's just a blip or a communication issue or whatnot, and you don't want to have to go through, the overhead of soliciting a NOTAM that you don't need to. But that's the requirement. There's less than 30 minutes upon a qualifying outage. And a qualifying outage is when you have a flashing light that is not functioning properly. It's, worst cases, it's out. Or the example I gave earlier, it was flashing every 26 seconds or whatever it was. And so those are considered qualifying outages. You also need to keep a daily monitoring log of that. Of course, we do all that electronically and have a system that keeps track of all that and provide that real time. There's also a requirement for quarterly on-site inspections. Where what we do for a quarterly on-site inspection is we actually go to the tower site physically. We run it through a system test. And so we have the ability to run it through a test that takes it through all of the functions from day mode to night mode. And it will inspect, all of the different load draws and everything from an S&MP and provide a health check on it. And we also take an 8-second video of it, put it in the logbook to show that the lighting system is flashing properly. That way you know that the system is healthy and you've got a visual record of it being, flashing that you put into your logbook. The other thing is the paint inspections that we talked about. That's on the top portion of the tower. That's style A only. There's the biennial lens inspections that we talked about. And then you have to keep all your logs on file for a minimum of 2 years. Ours are electronic, so we keep them, as long as you want to. But what we give our customers is access to this information as needed, as well as a quarterly report that says, here's your lighting system. Here's all the times that, the days where everything was fine. Here's any NOTAMs that had to be filed on it. Here's your quarterly inspection. Here's your video, and it's all in a nice digital package that's provided to the customer, so they have everything in one place.
Nice.
Next slide.
Nice. Okay.
So let's talk. That's kind of the regulatory piece of it. I was going to talk a little bit about the technology itself. The biggest thing that drove adoption of LEDs is starting in the mid-2000s. You can see this curve here, and this is the luminous efficacy, which is the number of lumens per watt that you are achieving. And you can see that curve gets really steep there. It was flat and it started. And once that got to a certain point, it became economical to start using LED lighting systems for obstruction lighting. And of course, we saw that for home lighting. I think if you talk to most people and they're going to put a new light bulb in their house, they have been for a long time putting LEDs in there. It went through different modes. And if you go to the next slide, this is a comparison of technology. I actually put this slide together from Wikipedia just because I was interested in it. And what's really cool is if you look at the top bar, it's the incandescent. It's at roughly 25 lumens per watt. And the compact fluorescent, which is, I've actually was changing bulbs the other day, Kurt, in my house, and had some old, compact fluorescents that were still hanging around. And those are,
me too.
Those
are up about, me too.
Yeah, they're still out there. They're at 75. And then you go to linear fluorescents, which you would see like in a supermarket, whoever the big long linear strips that go across the top. And then metal halide and high pressure sodium are typically sports stadiums or applications. And then you have the LED at 300. So that incandescent, that 620 watt bulb behind you is, it is at 25, and an LED is at 300 from a lumens per watt perspective. It's really radically different. But there's really two things that makes the technology more efficient. The first is the fact that LEDs have a lot better, luminous efficacy. In other words, a lot more lumens per watts, which you see from this graph. The other thing is that unlike the older design where you had an omnidirectional almost lens, it has a Fresnel capability in it with the glass lens there, but it's also somewhat omnidirectional. That's not very efficient. So the question I always ask is, if I wanted to use the least amount of watts to read a book in a dark room at night, what would I do? Well, I'd use an LED bulb, as you can see from this graph there. But rather than screwing a light bulb in the middle of the room and lighting the whole room up, I'd use a little reading lamp that went just over the page. So if you look at the technology here, and we were talking earlier about the minimization of light pollution, that also serves to increase the efficiency of the lighting system along with, the lumens per watt piece of it. So it's kind of two different things that are working to your advantage with this technology. Next slide. This is a beacon right here. This is actually up in Albuquerque. My mother-in-law's house is right behind that open beacon out there. She's sitting out in the back porch right now, probably. And what I wanted to show you and what's important in this slide is what's inside of this beacon here. So if you open it up, you'll see really a simple surge protection capability. And then you'll see some LEDs and some mirrors, and that's it. So you don't have a power supply. You don't have microprocessor, you don't have any memory, you don't have any of the stuff that can cause problems. There's a specialized cable that's used that has a specific grounding capability. And there's, whenever we do an installation, we have a software capability that we get real-time photos of the project as it's being done. And we also provide those to our customer real-time. So if we're doing an installation, we're both getting real-time photos. And one of the things we check out is to make sure there's a proper installation and proper grounding and whatnot of these lighting systems. But the key point in this slide is that the intelligence is down on the ground. And, you'd rather have that on the ground than 350 feet up in the air.
Sure. Next slide. Absolutely.
So that's a little bit about the technology. I was going to talk a little bit about our company and some of the stuff that we do. But more importantly, about a different way of looking at the financial model for tower lighting. And if you look at this, our business, we're all across America. We're predominantly started in the central and eastern time zones. We've moved to the western time zones and a little bit in the Pacific time zone, just by design. We're in roughly 40 states. And we focus on the telecom space, the broadcaster space, a lot of departments of public service, counties, cities, electric utilities, tower companies, oil and gas, universities, up to 2,200-foot towers. So a variety of different types of customers there. And if you go to the next slide, the way we look at lighting is we look at the four components of it. And you guys know as engineers that if you go in and you say, hey, I need to buy a piece of equipment, that's just one piece of it. You know, okay, so you got the lighting system itself there, but you also have the, you know, you have to take care of it, do maintenance. I was just in a SBE meeting just a little while ago, and the guy said he'd spent $55,000 a year on repair and maintenance on his lighting system that year. So that's a real expense that needs to be factored in. In addition to that, in this instance, you have the compliance and monitoring piece that we talked about, and then the cost of getting, you know, the on-site inspections if you're on top of a mountain or if you're somewhere far away, et cetera. So we bundle all this stuff together into a product that we call Tower Lighting as a Service. And, you know, if we were going to, you know, if you're on an elevator ride with me and say, what do? I'd say we're America's only Tower Lighting as a Service company. So we will buy a new LED lighting system for you. So we'll write the check. And then we'll install it. We'll take your old system down. We'll decommission it and recycle it or give it to you if you want it. And then if anything goes wrong with your system, we'll fix it. And we will do the compliance and monitoring and on-site inspections that are required. And we save 100% of our customers' money because this is all we do. We do hundreds of these across the country every year. And by doing this, we can, you know, save a customer money if they want to go with a variation of our product where there's no upfront capital. We can do that. Now, one of the things that as we talk to different customers, we take these four things and we put it into a package that happens is everybody looks at money differently. And if you go to the next slide, what we've done is we've actually got three variations of our products and services. The first one on the left is what I've been talking about primarily is the Tower Lighting as a Service piece. So that's once again where we buy it, we install it, brand new LED system, anything goes wrong with it, we fix it. And we do the compliance and monitoring. And it's typically a five-year term. And at the end of the five-year term, you can renew it. If you want to go off and do something else, we will take our lighting system down. Or you can just renew it. And we have a known, it's a flat rate for the first 5 years, so there's no increase. And then starting in year six, at the end of the fifth year, starting in year six, there is a built-in escalator into the that we both know, which is 4%. And so it's one of the few products where you can know exactly how much you're going to pay for as long as you do business with us. And I told somebody the other day, that's not the case with the baker or the, certainly not the gas station or the haircut place or anything. And so that's Tower Lighting as a Service. That's the green box. That's the lowest upfront because we buy the system. And it's also, the one that, we sell the most of. The one in the middle, though, we also have a good presence, and that's the exact same product except for your payment is higher. And at the end of the fifth year, you own it. There's a lot of folks that still like, I'm an owner, I want to own it, but I don't want to have to write, you know, a big check up front, and I want to spend that money on something else. And that's called Tower Lighting as a Service with the $1 buyout. So we buy the system, you know, install the system for you, take your old system down. Anything goes wrong with it, we fix it. And then at the end of the fifth year, you own it. But if you want to continue on with the assurance warranty and the compliance and monitoring services, you can do that. So that way you know that you'll end up owning it, and then you can continue to know exactly what your costs are going to be for as long as you do business with us. The third box on the right is the purchase and install plus services. And what that is more of a legacy model. You buy the system up front. So you write the big check up front to buy the lighting system instead of us. But we can, you know, put it under an assurance warranty compliance and monitoring package, and we can hold your, you know, cost of that flat for 5 years. And then you'll know what your escalator will be starting in year six if you elect to renew. And so with all three of these flavors, you have the ability to get a brand new state-of-the-art lighting system with all the benefits that we talked about. You have the ability to make sure that, you're in full compliance. You have the ability, we believe, to save significant money and have full price protection. And then lastly, it frees you up. You'll have full visibility, everything going with your lighting system like you need to, but it frees your time up to go do the things that make money, because lighting systems don't make, you know, television, radio stations money. It's something that they have to do. And so we try to figure out a way to use our size and scale to save folks money. So that's a description of a different sort of way to provide lighting to customers that LumenServe offers.
That's a really good point that broadcasters don't make money from their lighting system. So you want a predictable expense and you really don't want to have to worry about it. That's a really good point. I've worked at TV stations, you know, Doppler 4 color radar keeps you safe during a storm. But I've never had, Channel 4's LED lighting system keeps you safe during takeoff and landing. That's a good point. I'm liking a lot of these things. Chris and I are going to have some Q&A here in just a minute. We're talking with Bear Poth. He is the president and CEO of LumenServe. I think a good part of their philosophy is right there in the name of their company, LumenServe. And we've actually talked to Chuck Kelly about LumenServe's business philosophy also. So pretty cool with all the tech involved and the changing rules and them wanting to, you know, help you make sure that you have the proper, but yet, you know, I'm going to say the minimum lighting, but, you know, some of the requirements have come down. And so maybe you can save money and trouble, especially over time, by letting LumenServe evaluate your tower and see what you need. Hey, Chris Tarr is here with me on This Week in Radio Tech. We're going to talk about a couple of our wonderful sponsors, people who help make this show absolutely possible. And one of them is Angry Audio and their new mic processor called Smooth. Chris, what you got about this?
And it is smooth. You know, in the past, you know, you looked at a mic processor and they had a bunch of knobs and switches and all these little things to twiddle, and none of them sounded the same. You could take, you know, a mic processor, give it the exact same settings, plug it in, and it would sound different. Well, you know, as Angry Audio got into the business of doing some studio processing, Catfish sat down with Corny and said, hey, you know, do you think we could do a mic processor? And they started designing it, and, well, it had a bunch of knobs on it. Catfish doesn't like knobs. He said, you know, is there a way we could make this simpler? And Corny said, well, you know, if we knew what kind of mic it was going to connect to, that might be an issue, you know, that might help. So then Catfish said, well, then, yeah, what if we did know? So comes this new, there's actually going to be two different types of mic processors. The first one is the Smooth, the Chameleon Smooth, and they call it Smooth because it's for the SM7 and the SM5. That's what the SM stands for in Smooth. And it's a microphone processor designed for the Shure SM5 and 7 or any other Shure microphone that uses the same capsule. And what's great about it is it's already been pre-tweaked to really make those microphones sound great. Now, you do have some control. There's if you look, there's a security panel there. You can pop that off. And there's some controls in there to tweak the mic processor to the sound that you'd like. And if you scroll up again there, you can see right there, I'll scroll down a little bit there, Suncast to the backside. You can see that they've got plenty of connections there for inputs, outputs. They can use the line level stuff. They've got EAS EBU on studio hub connectors. They, of course, have a really good ultra low noise and high gain mic preamp in these boxes. So they have fantastic preamps, LED displays to tell you what's going on, low latency DSP algorithms, and just they sound so, so good. That is the Smooth. And then coming up, there's going to be another one. I wonder if you can guess what this one's for. It'll be called the Rebel. So give that some thought. See if you can know and figure out what that one's for. Get it today. Go online, angryaudio.com, or to your favorite broadcast dealer and pick up the new Smooth mic processor. You're going to get a great sounding microphone every time. If you just want to put it in there without even twiddling knobs, you're going to get a fantastic sound from your Shure SM series microphone. Angryaudio.com. When you get angry, problems go away.
Thanks a lot, Chris. Thanks, Angry Audio, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Our show is also brought to you by Max Connect. Not only do they have this wireless box, other services too, but right now John Tokok is here to tell you about the 4G LTE connection.
With all of the recent cybersecurity attacks against large corporations, we were looking for a product that would give us the ultimate security at our transmitter sites and as well as with our broadcast equipment. Max Connect fits the bill very well. Its greatest security feature is the fact that it gives you a single static IP address. Using this single static IP address allows us to close hundreds of open ports on our firewalls across the company and restrict access to only the Max Connect IPs. This has greatly reduced our exposure to the World Wide Web and made us much more secure moving forward. It's also given us the ability to expand as needed in a secure fashion.
That's John Tocock. And I tell you, the Josh Bone has told me, I saw him just a couple weeks ago, that the MaxConnect wireless modems are just selling like hotcakes. People are using them left and right because of the benefits that they offer. But I'm here to remind you that the MaxConnect group, and that's what Josh Bone has moved his company into, that name is stuck very well, wants you to know that they do engineering services, outside engineering services. They have people on the ground in a number of Eastern U.S. states, or still travel anywhere. But if you've got a project going on, MaxConnect Roof can give you a competitive bid on getting that project done, getting the proper manpower in there with the proper tools and equipment and best practices to get your engineering project off the ground or complete. They'll come in halfway through, whatever they can do to help you to meet your engineering goals, getting your broadcast facilities up and running properly or fixed or refurbished, whatever it may be. Contact MaxConnect Group. You go to maxconnect.com, MaxConnect, maxconnect.com. There's a link in the show notes, and talk to them. Thanks a lot, MaxConnect, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, we got a few minutes left here with Bear Poth, and he's with LumenServe. Bear, I'm wondering, tell me about the company. Did you start this company? Did you purchase another company? How has this thing come about?
We've been in telecom business for a long time, and we have a group of investors that we worked with. And when that idea came out in the shower to go do this, we took it back to investor group. And it's interesting because we've got some, you know, investors, including the founding CEO of American Tower back in the day, and some of the original money in Crown Castle. So we've got a good group of very experienced telecom group that we got involved with. And what's interesting is, the marketplace out there, there is quite a number of folks who understand the value of owning their own tower. And, you know, we think that's a really smart financial thing to do, because there's a lot of different technologies that we don't even know about that could utilize those towers coming down the road. But we found that, like a lot of folks, they tend to specialize in others. Very few people that have their own tower climbers and their own knowledge, or they buy a few lights every year. And so we can step in and provide our scale and expertise and help people save money, get brand new technology, and make sure they stay compliant. So it's turned out to be a really nice marketplace for our business.
Gotcha. Talk to me about your customers. What, when you convert broadcast facilities or other telecom facilities from whatever they were doing, their own tower inspections, their own lighting inspections, their own lighting maintenance, or hiring a tower crew every time something is needed, as opposed to a service like yours, what tends to be the reaction, either, you know, right away or a few months in, or when you check back with them the next year, or even at the end of their 5-year period, with a known price and it's time for an escalator to come in place? What are the reactions that people give you?
Yeah, we've never lost a customer, and we've had 100% renewals. So that's a really good sign, you know, for the business. When we get a new customer, I'm an engineer, so we have a lot of process driven with our business. So we have things that within 24 hours, you'll get a welcome letter from me. And then we'll have a kickoff call to go through all the little details. Because as engineers, we want to know all the specifics to make sure no mistakes are made and make sure that there's really good communication. We come out and we do a site review of your site before we build, and then we do coordination, obviously, very closely with your engineering team to go build it. And then the software that we have allows us to do real-time, basically what is a photo closeout package, but real-time for you to know exactly what's on your tower. So it gives you some benefits of giving, you know, real photographs of what exactly being put on your tower. And then once we get the system up and running, we run it through a battery test, and then we begin to monitor that system and take it through the compliance regimen that's required for your particular tower set. And our customers are just thrilled to death because, you know, they know we know what we're doing, and we have the scale. But what's most important is, you know, we'll come out, we'll buy the lighting system. So we'll put our money where our mouth is. And I think that's a pretty powerful testament. It's, to be able to come in and do that for somebody. And of course, we offer it three different ways. So if you want to buy it yourself up front and then us supply the services, we'll do that. Or, you know, we'll buy the lighting system. So I think that's helped us a lot. And then because we got such a range of customers, Kurt, it's really interesting to kind of just see the way different people operate. And my compliment to the media engineers is really heartfelt, having spent, you know, time in front of 40 plus SBE groups. You guys got some good engineers. I already got one email from somebody saying, hey, I want one of those posters because they care about, you know, they care about information, you know, and compliance, and they want to try to do the best. But they also realize that, you know, most RF engineers and broadcast engineers are stretched really thin right now. And they have to, you know, do so many different things. And oftentimes, if I walk into an SBE meeting, I'll see, you know, a bunch of people that are working for multiple stations because of the fact that their expertise is stretched over so much. So this is a way to save money, but inject expertise and still have a good pulse on what's going on with your lighting system. But make sure you're partnering with somebody who not only is good, but who's willing to buy the lighting system for you.
Speaking of lighting systems, my impression may be wrong, but it seems like new tower construction is slower now than it was maybe 10, 20, 30 years ago when cell networks are really getting built out. Now, I'm sure there's new towers being built. It seems like I have heard of fewer and fewer city council meetings where, you know, the NIMBYs were there saying, hey, I don't want a tower in my backyard. Oh, why doesn't my cell phone work? What I'm getting at, though, is with the LED lighting systems, this has to be a good point for people complaining about a tower nearby their home or up on a ridge, because the lighting is even more directionalized toward airplanes and not toward the ground than ever before. Isn't that true?
Yeah. What's really interesting, Kurt, was we'll get fairly frequent call from a customer that says, hey, I've had some people in the community call and say the tower light's out. We're like, okay. We're showing it on, and, you know, we've tested it, and we got the ability to monitor. We got all the SNMP stuff. We're doing our health tech, all this kind of stuff. Why don't you go and drive about 2 miles from it and see if you can see it? Uh-huh. And what it is when you're down the lower level, it's hard to see. So if you take, and this has happened to me a bunch of times, I'll go out and, you know, there'll be a new tower that's being installed, and it'll be day mode. So you'll have a white beacon at the top, and let's say it's a 500-foot tower. I'm looking at the top, and I'm like, is that thing lit? I can't tell. So I'll walk a football field away and then two football fields. Then I have to get in my rental car and drive for half a mile. I can finally see it. So it's a testament to what you're saying about that element of it. It's an advantage. It's going to be the least light pollution that you can have with these newer systems that are out there.
We've got a tip of the week coming up in just a minute. Bear will have something for us. Chris, do you have any question for Bear before we take a quick break?
He was right about the tower lighting changes recently. I have a 650-foot tower with the LED strobes on it. And, you know, when I first experienced it, I thought they weren't working because I couldn't see them. And then I drove out literally half a mile or so, and then I could see them. So, you know, nowadays for sure, that's definitely a benefit. And I see what he's saying. You know, I've got 20 some radio stations. I probably have 10, 12 towers, and, you know, to monitor all of those, make sure the lights are working and filing NOTAMs and things like that. You know, that's not always a good use of our time. You know, we've got so many other things to do. So I do find that pretty compelling.
I agree completely. Hey, we're going to hear from Broadcasters General Store and this really cool device that on-air talent have just got to have. I've worked at stations. One of my stations, we had a morning guy that says, I got to have one of these. Got to. What is it? It's coming up. We'll be right back.
Hey, what's happening? St. John here, coming to you from Command Central, and wanted to tell you about the absolute best partner you can have in radio. I'm talking about, boom, Wheatstone's Vox Pro. Lots of different audio software out there. Why Vox Pro? It's the only software designed to do what we needed to do, which is record, edit, playback in real time. When I say lightning fast, I'm going to show you how fast you can edit stuff up in Vox Pro right now. Literally three clicks on the controller, mark left, mark right, everything that gets marked, you hit delete, it goes goes away. It's literally that fast. So we're going to take this part right here. Boom. From caller nine to him saying, I'm ready.
Five. Ready for that secret sound.
Boom. All of that stuff. Hit delete. It goes away. Here's your edit.
You are tackling secret sound, caller nine.
I'm ready, St. John.
So one of the best features of version 7, this is awesome. It's effects macros, and you can literally put a chain of effects together so that instead of having to normalize a phone bit and then use noise reduction on it and EQ it and all that, you can literally build a chain. One button, this button, this one's called call right here. I just click that. All of those processes happen instantaneously. Final thing that I love about VoxPro, and there's so much more to get into, but one of my favorite things, you can load it on a laptop. I've literally done my show from a hotel room in Armenia to the conference room at, yeah, this was fun, jury duty. Great thing, no one could tell the difference. VoxPro makes it totally easy. Telling you, if you're looking for the best on-air partner, call my friends at Wheatstone, ask them about VoxPro, and you will be glad you did.
And the place to go actually is Broadcasters General Store, because they sell everybody's stuff. BGS.cc is the website. Look, there's the new Rave radio mixing console. There's the Telos Axia Altus. I'm putting one of those in my new radio station. It just goes on and on and on. Go to BGS.cc. My favorite thing is to give them a call, because these folks are good on the phone. They are your friends on the phone to place order, to get ideas, to get quotes, to find out what piece of equipment might be popular for solving the problem you have. Their phone number, 352-622-7700 for Broadcasters General Store. Thanks a lot. All right. We got just for a minute or two left. Let's go straight to our guest, Bear Poth. Bear, you got some final word of wisdom you'd like to leave engineers across the land?
So in terms of a tip or anything, two items for you. One is the poster across the behind me is a really handy thing to have. We got 11 by 17 or 24 by 36. And the second thing I would say is, you know, without being self-serving, our website's page on regulatory as everything you'll need in all the links to the federal sites. It's a really good portal. We spent a lot of time putting that together. So having that sort of archive that you can get to. In addition to that, there are regular blogs that are out there. So we write articles about things like the impact of infrared or the avian standards. So a lot of the stuff I've talked about, there's full blogs out there that you can go read about. So if you've got a topic or anything, it's a really good one source place to go get access to information and or links that would be very valuable.
Good deal. I'll make sure that is in the show notes and in our show description. So we'll give people an easy clicking link. Lumenserve.com. Spelled as you might expect, right?
Right.
Good deal. Chris Tarr, you got a quick experience or a tip for us this week?
Of course I have a tip this week. Why would I not?
All right.
All right. So a lot of us have devices similar to, for example, the Broadcast Tools web-based silent sensor that send emails, but they don't make phone calls. So let's say your station goes silent at 2 in the morning. You're not going to see the email. You're not going to know. Well, our trick is to use one of the many, many email to phone services out there. And what they do is you can send an email to this service and it will dial out and read back the email. So what we do is in our silent sensor, we have the email to voice email address up there as one of the recipients on the email list. So if a station goes silent in the middle of the night, it sends an email to this service, the service calls my phone, and I know that we have a problem. And this is a great way to work with any number of systems that maybe will email alerts but won't dial a phone. A trick for those of you who are on a limited budget, you get the free Pura.cz silent sensor, and you can have it do that. And I think the calls are right around a penny a call or something like that. So that's my tip is, you know, you can make anything that can send an email into something that can make a phone call.
Hey, can you send me a link to such a service that you like or that you use, and I'll put that in the show notes.
Shirley.
Okay. All right. Please call me Shirley. I love it. Chris Tarr. That's a good idea. That's a good idea. Sometimes, even though you don't want to be waking up, sometimes you need to be awakened in the middle of the night for something serious. So. But not for your tower lights, because there's somebody who will take care of that for you.
And there you go.
And that's Bear Poth and Lumenserve. Thanks, Chris. Thank you, Bear Poth, for spending an hour and a half of your day. I appreciate you being here with us and getting the word out to all the engineers who watch our show. Thanks a lot.
Thank you as well.
All right. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.